Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back to the dialogue with Diwa de Boer on Reality Check Radio. We discuss politics, power, and culture. You can text us your thoughts on 2057 or email your questions to inbox@realitycheck.radio. We are joined now by Matt McCall from the Greater Idaho Project, and he is going to explain what that is. Welcome to the show, Matt, and please introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do, and then just a very, very quick introduction to Greater Idaho.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. My name is Matt McCaw. I am a lifelong Oregonian, born and raised here. And for your listeners and viewers, Oregon is a state, it's on the west coast of the United States, and it's really, it's one state, but it's really two very different geographic regions. Our state is cut in half by the Cascade Mountain Range. And on the west side of the Cascade Mountain Range, it's a wet climate, very urbanized, very left-leaning. And on the east side of the Cascade Mountain Range, you have a completely different climate. It's very dry. It's kind of high desert, very rural, agricultural, a lot of ranching, and the people are very conservative. So I was born in Oregon. I've lived in the Portland metro area. So Portland is our big urban city, and I'm sure people are familiar with Portland because you see it on the news all the time about every left-wing idea that you could possibly think of implementing tends to get implemented in Portland. And so we end up on international news and national news quite often because of those policies. So I lived in the Portland metro area for 20 years. My wife and I have 8 kids. We're foster parents. We've adopted 4 kids out of the foster system and small business owners. And we live in Central Oregon now, which is on the east side of the Cascades. It's kind of Eastern Oregon, but more specifically Central Oregon. So I've been involved with the Greater Idaho Project for about 3 years. And I got involved after the COVID craziness that happened in the United States and around the world. So in Oregon, Oregon is a very left-leaning state. So because of the geographic divide and because of the urban center is so big in Oregon, Oregon has about 4 million people, but the urban center, Portland metro area, has about 2 million of those people. So whatever the Portland metro area wants politically, they get. And so statewide, our government is very left-leaning because the Portland metro area is very left-leaning. When COVID happened in the state of Oregon, our government went very much heavy-handed lockdowns, closed businesses, closed churches, kept kids out of school, mask mandates, later on vaccine mandates. And so Oregon was one of these states in the United States that was very, very heavy-handed and implemented these policies that were just, you know, really draconian. And
it sounds like like Oregon is the New Zealand of America. Because we have
We are familiar. Yeah, exactly. You know, New Zealand news doesn't reach the United States too often, but it did during COVID because of what was happening in your country with your lockdown policies and all of the COVID stuff. So in the United States, because we have this kind of confederation of states, each state had a lot of leeway to implement the policy that they wanted to. So in Oregon, we had this very heavy handed lockdown policy. But in Idaho, which is right next door, it's just to the east of the state of Oregon, it borders with us. In Idaho, it's a very conservative state. It's about 80% Republican. And the COVID response in Idaho was completely different. Kids were back in school very quickly after that initial, you know, in March, everything kind of shut down around the world. Nobody knew what we were dealing with. But in Idaho, kids were back in school very quickly. Businesses were back open. Churches were back open. Mask mandates were nowhere to be seen. It was optional. Vaccine mandates didn't happen. So you had this situation where the people in Idaho, even though they lived right next door to us, had a completely different experience during COVID and got a completely different set of policies enacted on them, completely different governance than the people of Oregon. And in Oregon, the people in Eastern Oregon are very, very conservative and very much like the people of Idaho. In fact, we have the same geography. We have the same climate. We make a living the same way. Our economies are similar. The people of Eastern Oregon are far more similar to the people of Idaho than they are to the people of Western Oregon. And we wanted the policy that was coming out of Idaho. Instead, we had our businesses shut down. We couldn't go to church. Our kids were kept out of school. So that's when I got involved. That was, I have always been a right-leaning person, never political, never, I never donated to a campaign, never worked on a campaign of any sort. But the going through COVID opened my eyes to, man, I've got to do something or else my kids, my multiple children who I love and I want them to have, you know, the same great experience growing up in this state, in this, you know, beautiful part of the world that I live in, that I had. That's not going to happen if I don't get involved and we don't make sure that our government represents what we want. So I got involved in the Greater Idaho Project, and this project is really simple. It just says, let's use the political tools we have, imaginary lines, borders, and use those as a tool to get people governance that they actually want. And so in Oregon, what we can do is because we border on the state of Idaho, and because the people of Eastern Oregon are so similar to the people of Idaho, we can move that state line, that invisible line that was placed there 170 years ago, move it 200 miles to the west to the Cascade Mountain Range, which is where the actual cultural divide is in our state. And we could get the people of Eastern Oregon governance from the state of Idaho, which is the kind of governance that Eastern Oregonians vote for every election. Every election, they vote very right-leaning, very conservative, and they just always lose because we just don't have the numbers in Eastern Oregon to overwhelm, to overcome the advantage that the west side of the state has. So let's use this tool, get governance for Eastern Oregon that they want. Western Oregon keeps the governance they want. And we lower political tension. We lower all the political, bickering and divisiveness by getting people matched up to government that they actually want and actually makes sense for their communities. And I when I first heard about the project, I was like, that's brilliant. That's a brilliant idea. And it's one of these ideas that once you hear it, you're like, of course. It's so simple. It makes so much sense that I jumped on board and got involved. And now 3 years later, I'm executive director. I help lead a team of volunteer grassroots Eastern Oregonians that want to make this happen.
Wow, it sounds like it sounds like it's actually a simple thing that's going to be quite difficult to achieve, because moving state borders, like you said, it's a simple thing. You move the line, but there's going to be a lot involved in actually making that happen. I guess the first question I've got around the practicality is there a precedent for this? Like, do state borders in America move? How straightforward is it? Do people just vote to move the border and it moves? And how many times does this happen in America?
Yeah, great question. So there is a process for moving state lines in the United States, and there is precedent. In fact, multiple states have changed their borders. Full counties have moved from one state to another in the history of the United States. Full states have been carved off of other states. So there's a precedent, there's a legal process, and it is a pretty straightforward process. It just hasn't been utilized in a very long time. So we're talking about the last time that the process was used, really in a meaningful way was back in the American Civil War, back in, the 1850s and 60s, when we were still admitting new states. But at that time, people used imaginary lines, these state lines, to do exactly what they were supposed to do. Group people for representation purposes where it made sense, like-minded people, so that they would have governance that represented what those communities wanted. So it's not a crazy idea. It's not some wild harebrained scheme. It was something that was actually very common in the United States, back in the early days. Since we've kind of gotten to this last, 100 years of we have the 50 states and they all look like this, border changes have still happened, but they've been very, very minor. So for instance, Oregon and Washington changed our border. So Oregon and Washington border each other on the south and the north, and they're both very left-leaning states. But we actually did change our border in 1958 because our border was along the Columbia River. Dams are built. Rivers change course. It's not quite sure. When you say the border is going to be in the middle of the river and then the river changes course, what does that mean exactly? So they went through this process in 1958 and they clarified exactly where the border was. That's happened in other states as well with rivers and things like that. So the process is actually pretty straightforward. Any two bordering states in the United States, if the two state legislatures decide they want to move the line, they can do that. It just takes both legislatures to agree. So any two states can come together and say, you know what, where this line is not making sense. It's not helping. It's not solving problems. It's actually causing problems. And that's the situation we have here in Oregon. We have an arbitrary imaginary line that's dividing like-minded people and grouping non-like-minded people, and that's causing conflict. So any two states can come together if their state legislatures agree to move the border, move the line. It happens. They move it. It goes to the U.S. Congress for approval. Historically, interstate compacts, which is what that process is, historically, interstate compacts have passed through the U.S. Congress because the U.S. Congress, you know, there's not a lot of reason for senators and representatives in Virginia or the East Coast or wherever, the South, to say, if Idaho and Oregon, a red state and a blue state, believe that it'd be better for their citizens if this line moved from here to there, there's not a lot of reason for people on the East Coast to not want that to happen. So we believe that the big challenge will be getting the Oregon legislature to agree to move the border. The Idaho legislature has already passed a memorial in the Idaho House. So we went to the Idaho legislature 2 years ago, and we presented this idea to legislators there. The Idaho House passed a bill inviting the Oregon legislature to begin border talks. They saw the value in this idea and how it made sense. And so the Idaho legislature is ready to have this conversation as soon as the Oregon legislature is ready too. So we see that is our big challenge is getting Oregon, the state of Oregon, to do what's best for the people in their state and allow this line to be moved. But we don't see federal approval being a problem or a problem coming from the state of Idaho.
No, excellent. I was going to say, I've spoken with a sort of secessionist movement in America before. It was Daniel Miller from the Texas Nationalist Movement, and they wanted Texas to secede from the United States. But this is quite different. This is, you're not seceding from the United States. You're trying to secede from your state in particular to move to a different state. And what, I guess, what's the process here will be a little bit different where, say, in Texas, they want to convince the entire state of something to do something together. But is it more difficult in Oregon than you're trying to convince two halves of the state almost? You don't really want to, it's not going to be a united state. So as I probably, I guess the counties that want to succeed, the first thing you want to do is convince them to leave. So are these counties willing to leave? Are they happy to move the border? What's the progress like on that side? And then what's the general sentiment like on the other side of the mountains in the more liberal states? Are they basically happy to keep you prisoner, or are they also starting to say, okay, maybe it's in our best interest as well to have these people move out of our state?
Yeah, again, great question. So we'll take step one first. And so this movement, we had this idea. We said, this idea makes a ton of sense. We think it's a great idea. But, you know, lots of people have good ideas, and it doesn't mean anything if the greater populace doesn't think it's a good idea. So our strategy from the very beginning was, we're going to go county by county in Eastern Oregon, and we're going to ask voters directly. In Oregon, we have a process to do that. We can put things, citizen-led initiatives that go on the ballot. So if you gather enough signatures for an idea, you can get on the ballot and then everybody votes on it. So we've been going county by county in Eastern Oregon, and we're hoping to move 17 full and partial counties from Eastern Oregon into Idaho governance. We voted in 13 of those counties, so almost all of them at this point, and we're 13 for 13 in Eastern Oregon. The people in Eastern Oregon think this is a good idea. And it's not only do they think it's a good idea, they're voting and saying, we want our elected leaders at the state legislature to pursue this and make this happen. So we know the people of Eastern Oregon because they voted and said, we like this, we want this to happen. So yes, the people of Eastern Oregon would love to be part of Idaho governance. And again, you know, it makes sense. People in Eastern Oregon have voted the same way consistently for decades. And it just so happens they never win. Like, we vote for something at state level, we never win. We're just a political minority in our own state, but we vote just the way the people in Idaho votes. But because of where that line is, the people that live literally in some cases just 5 miles down the road and vote the same way we do and live their lives the same way we do, they get a style of governance that's completely different that they want. And we are stuck with governance that we didn't vote for and didn't want. So we've been going county by county. Like I said, we're 13 for 13. People of Eastern Oregon want this to happen. We've done polling in the state of Idaho. In Idaho, this is a very popular idea. People support this over 2-1. I mean, they see the value in adding like-minded voters, you know, all the land and resources of Eastern Oregon. So we're very popular in Idaho, very popular in Eastern Oregon. There's been polling that's been done in Western Oregon. And even in Western Oregon, they asked Western Oregonians, if people in Eastern Oregon counties vote to leave the state, should the state of Oregon let them go? And we did not get over 50%, so it wasn't a majority. But more people, 40, I think it was 46%, more people said, yes, we should let them go than said no. So even in Western Oregon, the people understand, and I think that this is true of most people. Most people are not interested in controlling other people that live hundreds of miles away and they never see and they don't have anything in common with. That's not in most people's, you know, on their to-do list for the day is to keep those people under their thumb. That people are interested in living their lives and building their communities and raising their families and having the kind of community that they want to raise a family in. And that's true in Eastern Oregon. That's true in Idaho. That's true in Western Oregon. So when you ask people in Western Oregon, hey, if these people are unhappy and they want to go be part of Idaho, should we let them? People in Western Oregon, more people than not, say, yes, we should. So it's a very popular idea. Self-determination is popular. It's part of the core, you know, kind of American, you know, it's who we are is this idea of self-determination and getting to choose our own government and what we want our community to look like. So our struggle has not been convincing people that it's a good idea. Our struggle has been getting politicians and elected leaders to actually pick up the ball and do something about it. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, part of this is just this status quo. Things are the way they are. There's a lot of money involved. People are entrenched in the system the way it has always been. And so anything that's going to disrupt that system is, you know, going to have a hard time passing. Part of it is a control thing. You know, a lot of people are not really willing to just give up, you know, part of our state. Whether it makes sense, whether it's a good idea, and whether people are saying, yes, we want to leave, there's just certain elected leaders that are not willing to say, you know, we lost 60% of our state on my watch. So we have some hurdles but those hurdles are not convincing people that this is a good idea. It's getting our elected leaders to actually follow through with what people want to have happen.
And so I'm presuming here then you haven't got any state representatives or senators at least on board to the point where they would say put forward a bill of some kind. Do you know, is that simply the case that you haven't convinced them yet, or are there some lobby interests or some vested interests that you sort of hinted at that have convinced them, no, this is a bad idea, in particular losing, as you mentioned, 60% of the territory of the state, that they just feel like that's just not a good look, and that the trade-offs for that are worse than anything else, really? It's like, oh, well, getting rid of 60% of potentially natural resources, maybe. Is there a lot of business or a tax that they may lose out on? What are the other implications for the state of Oregon?
Yeah, so first, the first part of that is we actually do have representatives and senators who are supportive of our movement. And we actually did have a bill that was introduced in the Oregon Senate that mirrored the bill that we passed in the Idaho House, which was basically, you know, a bill asking the Oregon legislature, asking Idaho to begin border talks. So we do have some elected leaders who are on board, who are hearing their constituents and advocating for us. Our real opposition comes from the west side of the state. And of course, you know, when we talk about the Oregon House and Senate, the vast majority of representatives and senators come from the west side of the state. And so those are the elected leaders that we've had the hardest time convincing. And, you know, one of the things that makes, again, our proposal is an easy sell. And part of the reason it's an easy sell is because it makes sense. People like it. And it actually makes economic sense for both all three parties involved. So Eastern Oregon is very agricultural and very rural. And so is Idaho. The economies of Idaho and the economy of Oregon are very, very similar. People make about the same amount of money and they, you know, they're just very similar. Western Oregon is wealthier. The economy is different. And so what happens in Oregon is because Eastern Oregon is not as wealthy as Western Oregon ends up sending a lot of tax dollars to Eastern Oregon. And it's not a small amount of money. It's like $600 per person per year that goes from Western Oregon to Eastern Oregon. So if they would let Eastern Oregon go, Eastern Oregon could join Idaho. And because we're so similar economically to Idaho, we wouldn't be a drain on Idaho's economic, you know, their tax base. We would actually be a net positive for Idaho's tax base, but it would also be a net positive for Oregon's tax base because all those dollars that they're currently sending to our communities now, they would get to keep at home. So economically, it's a win-win. politically, it's it also a win-win. Western Oregon is very left-leaning. Our urban centers, I don't know if this is true in New Zealand, but this is most certainly true in the United States, is that our urban centers tend to be very left-leaning and vote overwhelmingly Democratic. And then you get into our rural areas and it's a mere opposite. You have very conservative. So in Oregon, you have Multnomah County, which is where Portland is. It votes 80% Democrat every election. You get out here in Eastern Oregon and our counties are all voting 75% Republican. So by letting Eastern Oregon go, all the Republicans, representatives and senators that we're currently sending to Salem, which is the capital for the state legislature now, all our representatives and senators do is just stop things that Western Oregon wants. That's all the power that we really have because we don't have a majority. And oftentimes we've been in a super minority status, but we can stop bills that we really, really don't like. So what you get is this gridlock that you have all these people on the west side of the state, 3 million plus people that want certain policy. So for an example, in Oregon, we passed a measure statewide called Measure 114. It was a gun control bill. United States, we are very pro Second Amendment, especially out here in rural areas. People love, you know, it's gun culture. Most people own guns. People are comfortable with guns. And in rural areas, conservative areas especially, they don't want any restrictions on guns. But Western Oregon is different. It's more urban. It's more left-leaning. They wanted some gun control, you know, measures put in place. So they passed this policy statewide. Eastern Oregon judges threw up a red flag and said, no, we're not going to let that go through. We're going to stop it. So now Western Oregon pretty much agrees we want this sort of policy for our communities. We think this will make our communities better and safer. But they can't implement them because people that live hundreds of miles away and have a completely different worldview and value set than they do don't want that policy implemented on them. That doesn't make any sense. So by letting us go and be part of Idaho, we would get the government we want. We would have the policies for our communities that we want. And Western Oregon could implement the policies that they want for their communities. It's a win-win politically. It's a win-win financially, you know. Our struggle to get elected leaders to move, I think, is not because it doesn't make sense economically and it doesn't make sense politically. It's other factors, whether that be, you know, like I mentioned, there are entrenched systems in place. There are entrenched interests and things that are not so, you know, visible and easy to see. And then there's just the whole, you know, states and countries throughout the history have not been overly eager to let people go just because it's the right thing to do and it makes sense. So we have to overcome that. But we believe we can. You know, we have a popular idea and it's a good idea. And we think given time, given attention, given people across the United States, people across the world, seeing how this makes sense and that's, you know, what's going on with why is Western Oregon holding these people captive that don't want to be part anymore, that we can make inroads, we can make this happen.
And we're really seeing this all over the world and in New Zealand as well, in terms of a rural urban divide and different values, the way that people vote, the way they want to live. And in New Zealand, it's a very centralized country, very hard for any kind of local government to make a difference or to allow differences to exist within the country, different policies. We have a little bit of local government, but it's not very powerful. There is a bit of a push in New Zealand as well towards what we would call localism or greater self-determination, as you mentioned. And I quite like the way, you know, you've described the American system, and even within states and counties, you've got a lot more power than we do here in New Zealand to have our own policies and for people to be able to live the way that they want to live. And it seems like a good solution, really, what you're proposing is that it would allow people who are currently in conflict, people who currently have nothing in common, really, to continue to live peacefully. And they don't have to move. They don't have to change their politics. They don't have to change their culture. They just need to change the way that their system of governments is set up, really, and to give the two different people who have entirely different ways that they want to live in their geographic areas, all they really need is the ability to govern themselves the way that they want. And that's absolutely how simple it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that we say, which I think is really true, is that Greater Idaho, because we get accused sometimes of being divisive or partisan or whatever. Greater Idaho did not cause this. our cultures, our urban culture and our rural culture, our left-leaning culture, our right-leaning culture, they're drifting further apart. And on more and more issues, people are getting further apart and getting less tolerable to each other about, you know, being able to live under those kinds of conditions. We didn't cause that, but we are trying to fix it. And we understand that, you know, the people of Portland, the left-leaning people in Portland have a completely different value set than we do. And that is just that, that is reality. And people in rural areas have a very different value set. And so rather than those two groups constantly at loggerheads, you know, trying to fight over control of a government to then force policy on people they don't want, that's only going to lead to conflict and tension. Let's use the peaceful political tools that we have to recognize that there is a difference in people and put, you know, mechanisms in place to lower tension, lower political conflict, and get people government that makes sense for them.
And just some more context for our New Zealand listeners as well. You've probably heard the term Antifa, and as well, I remember in Portland, this made the international news. They had this thing called CHAZ, like a some kind of like independent communist village.
Autonomous zone. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
The autonomous zone. That's right. And that made the news here. Tim Pool, many people here will know the name Tim Pool, very famous sort of classical liberal reporter. He got famous largely for reporting from within Oregon, from within Portland. And he was assaulted a number of times, very badly injured by these Antifa protesters or violent. I guess he was terrorized. And a lot of that came from, those are the kinds of policies that people want in Portland, where they want to abolish the police and they let these rioters run loose. And that's completely at odds with what you're describing as, for rural Oregon, we would think from here, oh, wow, that Oregon is a terrible place. And well, it's just filled with communists. And the whole place is not nice to live. But as you've just described here in the last half hour or so, that actually you've got wonderful territory. In fact, the majority of the territory in Oregon is actually really, really nice and very conservative. Yep. and would be a great place to live. And the only downside is really these coastal areas, you know, with these extreme liberals and progressives who are giving you a very bad name on the international stage.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And, you know, so where I live, I love my community. My kids go to an awesome Christian school. We have a great community. We have a great church. I don't want to leave. You know, I was born in Southern Oregon, raised in Central Oregon, where I'm at now. And it's a wonderful community. There's no reason to force 400,000 people who love their communities to move because the state government that's controlled by people that live hundreds of miles away with a completely different value set are trying to force things on us that we don't want. Let's choose a different path. Let's choose a different solution, one that makes sense and lower political tension and allow people to live peacefully in coexistence with each other in their communities.
Now, one last quick question on how this is going to affect the nation as a whole. Would this affect the Electoral College in terms of how many electoral votes and how important each of these states would become, Idaho and Oregon, would that impact the outcome of, say, a presidential election, hypothetically? And I'll tack onto that as well, what you think about the presidential election at the moment that's happening this year in America with Joe Biden, and if you think he's going to last through, you know, just your quick thoughts on the presidential election as a whole.
Oh, boy. Well, let me answer the first question first, because that's an easy answer. One of the reasons why our proposal makes so much sense, you know, a lot of times people ask us, why don't you just try to become your own state? In the United States, every state gets two senators, and Eastern Oregon's very conservative. So that would mean if Eastern Oregon were to become a state, they would get two Republican senators. And we don't think that the U.S. Congress would ever go for that. Right now, the balance of power in the United States is very evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. So anything that's going to affect that federal balance of power, that's going to give people a reason to say, no, we're not doing this. Our proposal takes something that's already there, and we just are shifting a line. So the only thing that would change at the federal level is Oregon has six electoral votes currently, and one of those representatives, one of those electoral votes represents all of Eastern Oregon. So that is a Republican, because Eastern Oregon is very conservative. And so he would go from representing Eastern Oregon to now Western Idaho. that one electoral college vote would go from Oregon to Idaho. So that's one out of, you know, what is it, 435 total. It minuscule impact. We haven't had a presidential election that was decided by one electoral vote. I don't know ever if we've ever had that. So it has a very, very minimal impact federally, which is one of the reasons why we think this just makes so much sense. You can do this. You can get better governance for these people. You can make everybody's lives better in Oregon and Idaho. And there's not a lot of reason to say no, you know, and so there's not a big federal impact. The second part of your question, what do I think about what's going on federally? Gosh, what a mess we have here in the United States. And it has been a mess ever since kind of 2016. Our national politics has just been, you know, you almost can't tear your eyes away from what's going to happen next. And so, you know, obviously out here in Eastern Oregon, people are going to vote, and they're most likely going to vote heavily for Donald Trump, but just like they did in 2016 and just like they did in 2020. And the west side of our state and the people in Portland are going to vote very heavily for Joe Biden if Joe Biden is still in the race by November. And if he's not, then I would suspect that they would vote very heavily for whoever is the Democrat that replaces him, because we are a pretty partisan country at this point. And people have entrenched views and entrenched values. And those, like I mentioned, those values are growing further and further apart. There's less and less commonality between our urban and rural cultures, and more things that separate us. And we see that play out, and it doesn't seem to matter too much who's representing the party. You still kind of get this same result, no matter, you know.
Yeah, that's a very interesting
point. What the quality of candidate is.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because people don't realize things are that partisan. It doesn't matter who the candidate is. The candidate can be senile. The candidate can be half dead. You know, you could probably run a corpse, a literal corpse, and it wouldn't change anyone's votes, because that's how divided and partisan politics has become.
I believe that's true. Absolutely. So, which is, again, just one of the reasons we've got to find better answers for our political situation than just, hey, half the country will vote for Joe Biden no matter what, but if Donald Trump wins, we're going to force all these things on the half that didn't vote for him. That's not going to go well. That's going to cause all the chaos that you've seen ever since Donald Trump showed up on the scene in 2015, you know, and vice versa. We can't just say half of our country, you know, would never vote for Joe Biden or a Democrat, but if he gets in charge, we're going to force all those policies on the other half. We got to find better policies. We got to have better answers so that we can allow people who have very different value sets and very different things they want for their communities to actually be able to do those without causing, you know, tension and anger and messing up people's lives in ways that they don't want them to. We think Greater Idaho Moving Borders is one of those tools that we can use.
Well, thank you very much, Matt McCall, for joining me this afternoon. And if you've got any final, I guess, recommendation for people to go and find out more about Greater Idaho, if they're interested, please let us know. And any final words as well, I'll give those to you.
Yeah, well, I sure appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about what we're doing. People, if they want to learn more about what we're doing or they want to donate, they can go to greateridaho.org. And, you know, we have all of our latest, you know, we'll have this up there, this interview and all of our appearances and everything that's happening with the movement. They can sign up for our email. You know, we're a grassroots effort. We are just normal, you know, Eastern Oregon rural people who want change and you know, have decided we got to get active and get change. So, you know, it's costs money to do things politically, to move bills through, you know, chambers. So if any people want to help in any way financially, we are always happy to do that and get them on our email list so that they can keep up with what we're doing. And again, thanks for the opportunity to come on and talk about our movement. And yeah, thanks for your support.
Well, thank you very much for the insights into what's going on in Oregon, what's going on in Idaho, and how the state borders work in America. Very, very interesting. And to all of the listeners, we will be right back after this break.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057, that's 2057, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.